As I said a moment ago, this is a tough little parable. Probably one of the more difficult ones of Jesus, not in the way that it challenges us, but in simply trying to understand what Jesus is saying here. Now, parables are stories told by Jesus. Sometimes they address the rather mundane events of life, something we all understand. Sometimes they stretch our imaginations to take us places that, well, we hadn't thought of before. And I think this is one of them here, where Jesus takes norms and twists them around to help us see something in a new light. But as I say all this, I'm also reminded of the words of the writer E.B. White. He wrote, among other things, books for children, such as Charlotte's Web. And he was talking about humor and jokes. And he once wrote that explaining a joke is like dissecting a frog. You understand it better, but the frog dies in the process. We can kill a parable in the same way, but I hope that doesn't happen here today. This parable goes by several names. The one I'm going to use is the parable of the dishonest manager. If you have a Bible, you might have headings in it that offer other ways. One I learned this morning at the early service was the crooked manager. That was a good one. Usually it's dishonest manager, or they turn it around and call it the shrewd steward, and we'll see why in a moment. But the parable begins with these words, Jesus saying to his disciples. Jesus says, there was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him, the rich man, that this employee of his was squandering his property. Now, this word manager is also translated steward, and they both mean somebody who takes care of things. A steward, like a wine steward, is the one who takes care of the wine. This manager or steward would take care of the business dealings of his boss, helps run the estate. So this particular manager, however, has been doing wrong. And word is brought to his boss that he's been squandering his property and his wealth. Now, the word squander means to spend wastefully or extravagantly. It also means to fail to take advantage of something, to lose a chance. She squandered her opportunity to go to college. So squander, however, is a great word here, because this isn't the only place we encounter it. We've seen it in the Gospel of Luke in the previous parable, which comes right before this. Anybody remember who else squandered something famously? Parable? Big parable. Prodigal son, yes. The prodigal son, the younger son, gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. And what these two parables have in common is not only did they squander, but they squandered something that didn't really belong to them. The manager squanders his boss's money. The son squandered his inheritance, but as you recall, his father wasn't dead yet. He demanded his inheritance. So it really didn't belong to him yet. So both of these have squandered something that wasn't there. So, having heard that squandering has taken place, the boss calls in his employee and says, "What is going on? I want to see the books. You're fired." It's all that takes place. The manager somewhat panics here. He's in a desperate situation, isn't he? Because he says, "I don't know how to do anything else. I'm not strong enough for manual labor. I can't go out and dig ditches. And I'm certainly not going to beg. I'm far too proud to be seen in the streets begging. I've got to come up with some social safety net that will take care of me for the rest of my life." So he comes up with a plan. Pretty good plan, too. He calls in people who owe his boss money. And the plan is to make them happy, to become friends with them, so that they will welcome him into their homes when he has no other place to go. So he calls in the first person and says, "How much do you owe?" And they said, 100 jugs of olive oil. The manager said, "Quick, take your bill. Scratch out 100, write in 50. Do it fast. You're good." Another one. "How much do you owe?" 100 containers of wheat. Make it 80. And he did this with every one of those who owed something to the boss. Boss found out about it. Well, I'm sure he was upset, but he did commend his employee because he had, quote, acted shrewdly. And that's where the parable ends, with the boss commending his employee for his actions. But Jesus continues going on. And Jesus comments on this, saying, "For the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light." The children of this age, I guess, meaning the people of the world. The people of the world are a little more savvy in dealing with the dealings of this world than are the people of God. And maybe Jesus is somewhat criticizing God followers for intentionally pulling away from the world, saying the problems of the world are not my concern, are they? I'm just here for God and the kingdom. Some even completely remove themselves from society. It would seem here that Jesus is criticizing that in a way, saying they really need to stay engaged. They can do more engaged than they can by pulling themselves out of society. And then he makes this really interesting statement. "And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes." By dishonest wealth, I'm pretty sure he just means money. He calls it dishonest wealth to contrast it with the wealth of the kingdom. Earthly wealth versus kingdom wealth. And he's saying, use that earthly wealth. Use it to make friends with the people of this world so that they will welcome you into the eternal homes. There are no eternal homes. The people of this earth do not have eternal homes. That is strictly the purview of God, who has the eternal kingdom. So you might be building up something here on earth, but it's not going to last. Don't put all your eggs into that basket. Jesus goes on to say, "Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much. And whoever is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much." Where does your faith lie? And then this statement is the one I want to focus on for the rest of the morning. Jesus says, "If then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches?" If you've not been faithful with the wealth you have here and done good with it, how do you think that's going to pay off in the kingdom when you've got a wealth that's much greater, which is more valuable, which is invaluable? Because what it seems is that Jesus is saying how we use our wealth and our money here on earth is a test. It's a test of how we might act in the kingdom when we have true riches. If you do well here, then, well, it's an indication that you will do well in the kingdom. If you don't do well here, it's not going to be so good for you in the kingdom. How we use the little that we have on this earth is a test of how we would use the limited wealth of God's kingdom. As I was thinking about this, I was reminded of this little story that I read probably in middle school. I remember reading it in class. It was one of these stories I guess the teacher handed out. I don't really recall the details, but the essence of the story has always stuck with me. And it's about a woman who I'm guessing she would take in foster children into her home, troubled children. And the story was set probably in the 60s, if not earlier. And this woman gets word that she's going to be taking care of a young boy. And this boy has a history of stealing. And so when the boy arrives, when the boy is brought to her home, she is very busy. She's very busy in the kitchen fixing a meal. And she says, look, I'm sorry, I don't have time right now, but I need you to go to the store, which is just up the street, I'm sure, and buy these items for the meal. And she gave him money, gave him more money than he needed for the meal, and said, go do that and come back and we'll talk, okay? And the boy goes off. The person that brought the kid says, you know, this kid is known for stealing. And she said, yeah, but I don't want to start out on that foot. I want to start out trusting him. And maybe that might change him. I remember the moral of this story, and it's a good one. Because not only is she testing him, but she's also establishing trust, showing that she does trust him. He doesn't have to live a life. In this new home, he can start a new way of living. This month, Forbes magazine published its annual list of the 400 richest people in the U.S. I don't know if any of us here are on that list. The article points out that the combined wealth of these 400 people totals $6.6 trillion. 400 people possess $6.6 trillion. And that wealth, in fact, has increased in the past year by $1.2 trillion. So they got 20% richer in the past year. Now, the top of the list is Elon Musk with $428 billion. And then the people that are scraping by at the bottom have $3 billion. They're just making it. I did the math and divided $6.6 trillion by 400. So the average person on the list is worth $16.5 billion. I guess it's nice if you got it. But Forbes also looks at how much money these people give away. And what we discover is that relative to their wealth, most give away very little. And Forbes has created a philanthropic score that they apply to each of these people. It's a score of 1 to 5. 1 means they've given the least amount, which is about 1% of their wealth. And 5 are those who give the most, which is actually 20% or more. And if you look at, they also have a graph of their wealth over the years, and almost every one of them, that graph just goes up. They start here, and then it just, they're making more money every year. These people are. Now, of the 400, of those that received a score of 5, of being good givers, of the 400, there are only 11 that got a score of 5. And I'll read the list. Edith Broad, Warren Buffett, Melinda French Gates, and Bill Gates, they're divorced, Reed Hastings, Amos Hostetter, Duskin Moskowitz, Lynn Schusterman, Mackenzie Scott, Marilyn Simons, and George Soros. These people give 20% or more of their fortune, or have given away, which is great. At the other end, however, of those 400, 300 of them, three quarters, have given away less than 5% of their fortune. And 40% of those 400 have given away less than 1% of their riches. I would like to think that those who have so much would give generously, but it doesn't really seem to be the case. Now, going back to the parable, as Jesus says, wealth is a test. And if that is the case, then we as a congregation have two tests directly ahead of us. Now, I know all of you, I know from your giving and from your work that you are generous people. You're not ones on that chart. You're going to be well up there because you are generous people. But as I said, in the immediate future, we've got two tests ahead of us. And I'm reminded again of those words of Jesus, if then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust you to the true riches? If you have not been faithful with the money that you have on this earth, how will that pay off in eternity? So the first test we have ahead of us is rise against hunger. For the eighth year now, we are going to gather together in the fellowship hall and package 10,000 meals. That takes place, as we mentioned, on October 11th. It'll be here very soon. But in order to do this, we also have to cover the cost of the meals, which is $4,263. And so far, we've raised over half of that, over $2,300. And to be honest, I haven't even started nagging you about it yet. I have great faith that we will get there, and on the 11th, we will be able to package that food. And what is so amazing about this is we're sending our money and our time and energy to people that we'll never see. They don't know us. We don't know them. I have no idea where the food will go. I trust the folks at Rise Against Hunger will send it to the right place. It may go to Haiti. It may go to Africa. It may stay here in our country. We don't know, but it doesn't matter. But we are giving of our wealth selflessly with no expectation of a reward whatsoever. If we do that, I think we pass the test. The other test is your pledge to the church. It's that time of year, stewardship season, and I will be preaching for the next couple of weeks on different topics of stewardship. But as we, as good Presbyterians, prepare for 2026 and preparing our budget and deciding how we are going to be engaged in mission in the future, we like to look at our money and how best to utilize that money. And it helps through your pledge and your commitment, because giving is a tangible sign of your faith. The manager in the story, I said he can also be called a steward. Steward is someone who takes care of things. We are called into stewardship season, because this is a time when we decide, how are we going to take care of the wealth that has been given to us? How are we going to be good stewards of the wealth in our lives? Now, I want to be clear. We're not here bribing God, saying, God, if I give you this, will you give me this? No. We give, expecting nothing in return, but trying to be faithful as we can be with the wealth of this earth, so that it will reflect for us in the wealth of the kingdom. Amen.